case this morning is 16-1352, Auto Owners v. Summit Park. Mr. Levine, welcome.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Bradley Levine on behalf of the Summit Park Homeowners Association. The District Court, before issuing the sanctions, should have considered whether or not Rule 11 was applicable. In the Chambers case, the United States Supreme Court indicated and made it very express that a court needs to exercise caution before it exercises its inherent power. And the Supreme Court went on to say that when there is a bad faith conduct in the course of a litigation that could be adequately sanctioned under the rules, the court ordinarily should rely on the rules rather than the inherent power.
If we interpret Judge Babcock's sanction order against the Homeowners Association as resting on Section 1927, do you lose this argument?
Well, 1927 only goes to the attorneys. The point is that he made it clear on page one of his order that he was doing it under the terms of the inherent power.
I'm sorry, under Rule 41B.
41B, if the court looks to footnote 13 in the Chambers case, it is not, Rule 41B is not a sanctioning power. In other words, the court has said that you need to look at other rules before using inherent power or dismissal under 41B. And that's what didn't happen here, and that's what the court should have done. We raised that issue. It was never addressed by Judge Babcock. Nowhere in his order does he make any reference whatsoever to Rule 11. Nowhere in his order does he tell us why it is that he didn't look to Rule 11. And that's what Chambers requires.
If the violation consisted of conduct other than submission of a pleading or a document in court, for example, a disclosure violation that occurs outside of court, would Rule 11 even fit?
Well, it does fit, Your Honor, and the reason it fits is because the sanction that was ordered here was the dismissal with prejudice of my client's counterclaims. That's a paper, in other words, that's something that is within the aegis of Rule 11. In other words, the ultimate, even if you're looking at whatever kind of conduct, that would inform you with respect to 11B in terms of the various types of reasons why it is that Rule 11 may be applicable.
Well, I'm having trouble grasping that, because sure. Typically you would file a Rule 11 motion to say that I am going to alert you, the pleader, that I do not believe that you have a colorable or reasonable basis for making an argument in court, I'm asking you to withdraw that document from the court file. And if there never was a submission in court by the party or the counsel, I don't understand what they would have done to say, I want you to withdraw this non-existent document that was never filed in court, or I'm going to file a motion for sanctions under Rule 11. I don't get how that would even apply.
Because what happens here is that at the time in which the court issued its order, the initial order saying, you know, the appraisals, it's gone, and I'm going to entertain sanctions. At that time, you had these counterclaims, right? Those were on file with the court. And what Auto Owners said is because of, you know, this misconduct by the Merlin lawyers, what we're asking you to do is to strike these counterclaims.
But not because the counterclaims were frivolous.
The counterclaims, if the court looks at the counterclaims, and now ultimately that's what Judge Babcock did. He based it on the conduct, okay, with respect to the disclosures. And by the way, I think that Rule 11 can go to the disclosures themselves as well. But beyond that is the fact that the counterclaims make specific reference to this appraisal award. In other words, they are founded on an appraisal award, which Judge Babcock has said that is it has to be withdrawn because of the fact that there were violations of my disclosure order. So the upshot of it is that if you look at the remedy which he imposed here, that was the striking of these counterclaims. And that's something that does come within the aegis of Rule 11. So that, it's something that the court should have considered as to whether or not Rule 11 would be applicable under these circumstances. Because that's the ultimate sanction that we're talking about. And what the Supreme Court said in Chambers is that you need to look to see whether or not other types of sanctioning authority is up to the task. That's what the Supreme Court did. Judge Babcock never did that. And so if the judge had done that, then, for example, you've got the safe harbor provisions. It would have allowed Summit Park at that juncture potentially to have withdrawn the counterclaims themselves, to have predicated their claims based upon not the appraisal award but other conduct, and gone forward with this dismissal without with prejudice, as counsel for for the Merlin Group has indicated, is that it's the death sanction. I mean, my clients have absolutely no recourse whatsoever with respect to the conduct by auto owners.
Well, the counterclaim that was dismissed was based on bad faith.
Your Honor, it actually included a claim for a declaratory judgment. It included a breach of contract, and it also included bad faith claims.
And the bad faith was you didn't pay us the, $10.8 million? Instead, you paid us only $245,000?
It wasn't that explicit.
And the $10.8 million was based on the appraisal that the court found to be fraudulent?
That's
where is the bad faith?
Well, at the time that it was asserted, okay, in other words, the counterclaims were filed in February. This was
right,
before.
Right, at the time, but now is now. When the court issued the order,
sure,
there was no basis for that claim.
And that's my point, Judge Briscoe, is that.
So what's the harm? If the court dismisses, denies, rejects your counterclaim, it has no basis.
Oh, no, Your Honor, there could have been other bases other than that award itself that Judge Babcock found was illicit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It could have had other types of claims for breach of contract. In other words, being able to demonstrate that the actual value of the damage was something else other than what auto owners said that it was. My clients don't have that opportunity anymore. They've basically been thrown out of court, and they can never make any kind of claim whatsoever. You know, furthermore, with respect to the damage to their properties, which they allege.
And you sought reconsideration on these bases that you're arguing now?
Do we seek reconsideration in the court? We didn't seek reconsideration in the court.
Any argument to the court, as you're making now, to say, look, you cut us off at the knees. There are other things that we want to argue, and you're basically throwing us out of court?
We made those arguments in our response with respect to the sanctions. In other words, we said that if you impose these types of sanctions, you need to consider Rule 11. If what you've done and this the result of this is going to be that we don't have any ability to be able to assert these claims. So the upshot of it is that we did raise the Rule 11 issue, and that was something that was never, ever addressed by Judge Babcock, and that's something that needs to be addressed by the
court. Would Rule 41 have been an adequate basis for the sanctions? Would Rule 41 have been an adequate basis for the sanctions?
Well, once again, Your Honor, the court needed to look at Rule 11. That's what the Chambers Court has said.
Right.
Rule 41 is a basis in conjunction with the inherent power. What the court did is rely on the inherent power and also cited to 41B and the Ehrenhaus case in reaching its determination.
Why isn't that an adequate basis for the sanctions then, in addition to Rule 11?
Well, first of all, the court needed to look at rules at Rule 11. But let's get to the next problem with what the court did, and that has to do with there has to be a determination of bad faith. And there was never an express determination that my client engaged in bad faith conduct, which is under the inherent power and Chambers. You need to have that actual determination of bad faith conduct by my client.
Your client is hired these attorneys whose conduct was definitely put in question by the district court.
Right.
So isn't your client responsible for the acts of the attorneys that it hired?
Your Honor, the courts, there has not been a single determination by any court, certainly no panel of the Tenth Circuit, that has said that with respect to a determination of bad faith in the context of an inherent power sanction, any bad faith conduct by the lawyers is going to be imputed to the client.
What about the Supreme Court's
Gripe case? excuse me.
What about the Supreme Court's opinion in Link versus Wabash?
In Link, first of all, that was before, I mean, it goes back to 1962. We're talking about that was before the Chambers determination. And that was not in the context of various kinds of violations of the rules. Okay, and so with regard to the construct that was set forth by the Supreme Court in Chambers, in other words, that you have to have, if you're going to exercise inherent power, you have to have this initial determination of bad faith. That was something, you know, was long after Link, and there's not been any case that has said that you can impute in the context of inherent power the bad faith conduct by the lawyers to the client.
But we have cases saying under the Ehrenhaus factors that the district court does have the discretion to dismiss with prejudice even in the absence of bad faith.
In the absence of bad faith, that's
right.
I mean,
there are I think five factors under Ehrenhaus.
Right, but what the Supreme Court has said and what this court, the Tenth Circuit, has indicated is you have to have an initial determination of willful or deliberate conduct in order for you to be able to exercise and go through the various factors under Ehrenhaus. And what I'm saying here is that you need to have, and again, it's never been reached by the Tenth Circuit whether or not you can impute in the context of an inherent power case, there's not been any case that has said that because of bad faith or deliberate willful misconduct by the lawyers, that becomes imputed to the client.
Do we have some involvement here of the client, Summit Park, when we have the deposition of Mr. Malachi? Is that how you pronounce it?
Right.
He apparently knew something, right? He was involved. Now he knew nothing.
He was basically, the affidavit indicates that the conduct, what he was doing was in conjunction with the lawyers. That's what his affidavit says. Judge Babcock says in his order, he indicates that there might be some, quote, suggestion of bad faith.
He corrects his deposition, which I assume was taken under oath.
Yes.
To say, after the fact, that in fact there was this contingency.
Right, and he indicated.
So he did know something. And he is an officer of the Summit Park?
Yes, he was the president. He does that. He basically, in his affidavit, he explains the fact that he made those changes in conjunction in discussions with the lawyers, okay? In other words, what he's doing is that he's, and this happens all the time, you have a deposition, you have, an EUO, what he's doing is he's reviewing that, and in discussions with the lawyers, he ends up making a correction 2.5 weeks after he actually got the transcript. And so certainly on that basis.
How much time had elapsed between the examination under oath, however, and the correction?
That was just close to a month, Your Honor. It's just around a month. In other words, it might have been over that. It was on December 4th of 2015 that he gives the EUO. He makes the corrections on January 10th.
Does the appraisal come in that month?
Yes, the appraisal comes
so,
in.
So
on,
he makes the correction after the appraisal comes
that
in.
Is correct. That's absolutely correct. And that's what, again, the affidavit was to address, that, and he talks about what was going on. It was around Christmas time and so on. He had other things that were going on, and that there wasn't any bad faith on his part and so on. And, again, Judge, there is no determination. You can look at that entire order. There's no determination of bad faith conduct by Summit Park. I'd like to just get to the last issue because it's really important, which is that the interest determination by Judge Babcock was absolutely wrongful because it was part of Auto Owners files a motion for sanctions, and we say it's a sanction, we should get this other $97,000, okay? And Judge Babcock, in his order, says, I'm not awarding this as a sanction, but I am awarding under the statute for wrongful withholding. The problem is that the Summit Park, other than in the the third amended complaint that was had been at that point filed and served by Auto Owners, there never was a claim for this interest, and we never had
opportunity. They filed that in their motion for sanctions, that they had cited specifically the Colorado statute.
All they did, they cited the Colorado statute for calculation purposes. It says, they basically just have, we're asking for this sanction, and then they cite to the statute to say we get 8%, okay? But the point is that there was no determination of wrongful withholding. In other words, we have an ability to be able to contest whether or not it's been wrongfully withheld. We were deprived of that ability to be able to do that. And therefore, that aspect of this order absolutely needs to be reversed, because again, we have the ability to be able to contest whether or not there was wrongful withholding and as of what date there may have been any kind of wrongful withholding.
Is your argument that there you didn't get a chance to litigate that issue, or is your argument that the statute does not apply at all?
Judge Timkovich, it would be hard to say that, you know, in light of everything that happened here, it would be hard for us to say it's inapplicable under any circumstances. But the question is whether or not, for example, whether or not we were wrongfully withholding these sums when at the point at which they were given to us by auto owners, whether or not, because there was never ever, at that point there was no order saying that you have to give the money back. The appraisal no good. In other words, that all happened before the March 30 hearing and the ultimate order by Judge Babcock on April 5th. So the point is whether or not there was, quote, wrongful withholding under the terms of the statute is something that we are entitled to litigate, and we never had that opportunity.
But it might apply to the sanctions order.
We just didn't have an opportunity to deal with it.
Okay. I think we understand your argument. Let's hear from auto owners, Mr. Stevenson.
May it please the Court, I am Evan Stevenson, and I represent Auto Owners Insurance Company. Your Honors, the question before the Court is whether Judge Babcock abused his discretion when he sanctioned Summit Park with dismissal for violating a court order, and then whether he abused his discretion or erred as a matter of law in awarding interest for the time when Summit Park wrongfully kept money from the appraisal award. Your Honor, at issue are two well-reasoned orders, orders that are comprehensive, that are detailed, that rely almost entirely on undisputed facts, facts that remain undisputed even on appeal. There has been no demonstration by Summit Park of any error, in fact, much less clear error. Only if the Court relies only on the parts of Judge Babcock's orders that remain completely undisputed, those alone are sufficient to affirm. Summit Park has given this Court no reason to reverse Judge Babcock's detailed and well-reasoned orders, and for that reason, this Court should affirm.
Doesn't the Dakota Station, though, a decision by the Colorado Court of Appeals basically take out the key legal position the Court took in finding that there was not an impartial appraiser here?
No. It doesn't do that, and the issue of impartiality has no effect on whether this Court should affirm. Let me first explain why it has no effect on what this Court should do, and then I'll address specifically why Dakota Station, the result would be the same under Dakota Station as well. So first, the reason this Court should find that the order is affirmed is because Summit Park had an obligation to comply with the order regardless of whether it was authorized, regardless of whether it applied the correct partiality standard. Regardless of any of that, regardless of whether Dakota Station is correct or the Supreme Court's prior opinion in Providence versus Washington is correct, the Merlin Law Group and Summit Park, acting through the Merlin Law Group, had an obligation to comply with that order. And so it really doesn't matter. It's neither here nor there whether the standard in the order is correct. Your remedy for an order that's incorrect is not to disobey it or to resort to self-help. And that finding alone by Judge Babcock is sufficient to account for all of the sanctions and for the interest award by Judge Babcock. So it is completely irrelevant to what you have to do. It is not necessary for you to even address Dakota Station in order to affirm the award of sanctions against Summit Park. Second, the result would be the same if you apply the Dakota Station standard. So the most generous thing that Dakota Station says for Summit Park is that appraisers can advocate and favor one side over the other. But that rule even if it's applied here, would have no effect on Judge Babcock's order. And the reason for that is that here the misconduct went far beyond George Keith simply advocating or favoring his side. The misconduct went to failure to disclose attorney-client relationships, and that's more than simply George Keyes presenting what he perceives to be his side's view. The misconduct here involved misrepresentations. In fact, that's a basis that would allow us to directly distinguish these explicit statements in Dakota Station. In Dakota Station, the court held that there were no misrepresentations and gave that as a reason for affirming. So even if you were to apply Dakota Station's holding here, Dakota Station would require reversal on that basis. Another reason Dakota Station is different is that Dakota Station gave great weight to the outcome of the appraisal. In Dakota Station, the Court of Appeals found that there were no significant gaps attributable to the action of the appraiser in that case, Laura Haber. But in this case, Judge Babcock held that there was an enormous gap of 47% between the contingency public adjuster's estimate of the loss and the ultimate appraisal award influenced by George Keyes. And this is, I could go on with more reasons, but the misconduct here went far, far beyond simply George Keyes acting as an advocate or favoring one side. And so, in fact, there's actually a part of Dakota Station at the end where Dakota Station addresses Judge Babcock's order and distinguishes it on its facts. Says that there were many reasons why the appraiser was disqualified there, and for that reason didn't follow Summit Park. So the Court of Appeals itself had an opportunity to criticize Judge Babcock's ruling, reviewed it, and declined to do so. So even under the standard of Dakota Station, the result would be the same.
Wasn't the court's vacatur, though, premised on Keyes' lack of impartiality?
Yes, the vacature order is premised on Keyes' lack of partiality, but the sanctions order would remain intact even if that order were an error. Even if you found that order were incorrect, the sanctions order for disobedience of the disclosure order is an independent basis that's completely unaffected by whether the vacature order is correct. And this court cannot reverse because some other order that isn't necessary to the result may have had some legal language in it that may be in question. That is not a valid basis under this court's precedent for finding an abuse of discretion. It's not error sufficient to reverse. Your Honors, I want to go through some of the arguments that Mr. Levine made. He cites the Chambers case and says that the court was required to address Rule 11, and if the court didn't address Rule 11, that you must reverse. And almost every aspect of those arguments is wrong as a matter of law. So the Chambers decision by the Supreme Court did not create any per se rule, no algorithm that says you must first address Rule 11. And if you don't first address Rule 11, you must reverse. Nothing in Chambers says that. What Chambers actually says is that courts should be cautious. But if Rule 11 is not adequate, then go ahead and look to other rules. There is no direction in Chambers for automatic reversal in these circumstances. So the characterization of Chambers by Summit Park is simply incorrect as a matter of law, and that's the only interpretation they give it in their brief. Any other way of interpreting Chambers, any other way of arguing based on Rule 11 has been waived in this court. And so because that characterization is wrong as a matter of law, this court cannot reverse based on that argument. Second, it is not true that on page one of Judge Babcock's order, he said he was sanctioned under the inherent power. I have page one before me. Those words do not appear. If you want to know what power he relied on, you have to go to page seven of the August 1st, 2016 order. And there, Judge Babcock says, in the first paragraph, Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 41B recognizes that the court may dismiss a claim or action where a plaintiff fails to comply with these rules or a court order. That is the source of authority that Judge Babcock relied on. The Chambers principle does not apply to Rule 41B. There is no preference as between Rule 11 and Rule 41B. I agree that the Chambers cautions that you should look first to Rule 11 if what you're comparing is a potential sanction under the inherent power versus Rule 11, but there is no preference when the source of authority is Rule 41B. Mr. Levine said that there are no cases sanctioning people with dismissal under Rule 41B. Well, how about Ehrenhaus versus Reynolds? How about Gripe, the Gripe case from 2002, Gripe versus City of Enid? Mr. Levine says that bad faith must be found. Not true. The Gripe case cited by Judge Babcock and never addressed once in all of Summit Park's briefs, that case dismissed under the Ehrenhaus factors without a finding of bad faith. That case never discussed in any of Summit Park's briefing. So any response to that has been waived in this court. Your Honor, Mr. Levine did not address any of the Ehrenhaus factors in his argument, and in the I don't think he did address any of the Ehrenhaus factors in his argument. But in their brief, in Summit Park's brief, they analyzed the factors incorrectly. There's only one type of argument that is made in the brief. Each time Summit Park addresses an Ehrenhaus factor, Summit Park says this factor is not enough to dismiss my client's case by itself. And that is a legally irrelevant argument under Ehrenhaus. It is not a rigid test. It does not require that every single factor must independently justify the entire sanction itself. Ehrenhaus says to look at all five factors and weigh them in the totality. In fact, Ehrenhaus itself found only two of the factors weighted favor of dismissal and affirmed. In this case, all of the factors weigh in favor of dismissal, and this court should affirm.
Now, isn't it pretty clear, though, that the court was basing the sanction both on Rule 41 and its inherent powers?
Even if that were true, it would make no difference to Summit Park's argument. If there are two bases...
And that's because you don't concede that there's a hierarchy between Rule 11 and the inherent powers. Is that what it boils down to?
Correct. Even if you were to find that it was error to not consider Rule 11 as to the part of the authority that is inherent power, you have an independent basis for reaching the same result. This court cannot reverse when there is an adequate independent basis for the same result. This court does not reverse in those circumstances. And so this court cannot reverse here for that reason. Your Honor, I made a long list of all the findings of the district court as to each Ehrenhaus factor and all the facts underlying them. And I'll spare you the pain of listening to me go through all of them, but virtually all of them are completely undisputed. There's no dispute that 14 months was wasted. There was no dispute that Auto Owners was impeded from resolving its claims. No dispute that the degree of actual prejudice should be given significant weight. Wasn't disputed. The only response by Summit Park in one paragraph of its brief is that Auto Owners should have mitigated the prejudice that admittedly occurred. That's not a basis for reversal. None of the findings were even disputed, much less shown to be clearly erroneous. A few additional ideas to be thrown in are not a basis to reverse under any of this court's cases.
Well, what about opposing counsel's argument that, with regard to Mr. Malachi, that Judge Babcock erred in attributing culpability to him because all he did was what customarily happens? A witness gives sworn testimony, gets a transcript, and then makes a correction within a month.
So three responses to that. One, that's simply one ingredient of the court's order. So even if you were to somehow find that that were incorrect, there are so many other instances of misconduct, so many other things, that reversal is not possible here. But I'll respond to that specific one. That Judge Babcock found on page 9 of his order that it was not credible when Mr. Malachi denied acting in bad faith. The judge found that not credible, and that credibility finding is not challenged in Summit Park's brief. It's not even acknowledged. They don't even mention that it exists. And so how can this court reverse for clear error?
So is that the only hook? Is that the only tie to Summit Park?
No.
That testimony?
No. There are four things that Judge Babcock pointed to that Summit Park did directly that account for a finding of bad faith, even though a finding of bad faith is not required, and even though a finding of Summit Park's bad faith is not required under this court's cases. Merlin's bad faith is enough. But even though those things are not necessary to show, there were still four things that Summit Park did. First, There was the concealment of the contingent cap agreement, which we're discussing right now. Second, there was the selection of George Keyes in executive session by the board after learning about his background. Judge Babcock found that. Not challenged on appeal, not shown to be clearly erroneous. There was the failure to disclose Keyes' background after learning about his conduct. Both of those findings, last two I discussed, are on page 11 of the August 1st, 2016 order. So none of that was challenged on appeal. None of that was even argued to be clear error. Those by themselves would be enough to say that Summit Park acted in bad faith and to sustain the court's finding that Malucky's affidavit where he denies bad faith is not credible. The fourth finding by Judge Babcock is that Summit Park continued even after all of this came out. After all of this happened, they just continued on, saying the court had no authority, the court moved the goalposts, the court was wrong. Today, they're shoulder to shoulder, incorporating each other's briefs. There's been no remorse, no distancing from Merlin whatsoever, and the court found that significant. So those other three things, directly attributable to Summit Park, are sufficient to sustain the court's finding. And yes, Your Honor.
If you could turn to the prejudgment interest statute quickly, doesn't that only apply to wrongful withholding of compensatory damages and not to sanctions amounts?
Yes. And it was an appropriate ruling here because the basis for Summit Park having the money was eviscerated on two grounds. The vacature order eliminated that right to have the money, and then the sanctions order independently eliminated any right to have that money. That's on pages 15 to 16 of the August 1st, 2016 order. And so because Summit Park had no right to have the money, Your Honor, do you mind if I finish answering your question?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, because Summit Park had no right to have the money, it therefore was liable for interest. And one last detail that I think is not perfectly clear from the briefs that I think may be helpful to Your Honor is, auto owners had claimed for recoupment, and the money was given back. So the substance of that recoupment claim was mooted.
Did the court ever enter judgment on auto owners' declaratory judgment claims, recoupment, a couple others? What happened to those claims?
I would argue that the recoupment claim was mooted by the return of the money, and so the last outstanding piece of that claim was interest. And of course, Summit Park did have due process because the two orders that account for that result were the vacature order and the sanctions order, for which there was plenty of process. So there's no due process deprivation here. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Levine, I'll give you a minute and a half if you care to use it.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. Let me just, I guess in terms of any kind of a reading here, on page one of the order from Judge Babcock, the words that he says, I grant the motion and dismiss with prejudice some parts counterclaims in this matter pursuant to the court's inherent authority, period. Mm-hmm. So it's very clear that was the sole basis for his order here. As to the whole question about whether or not there was misconduct here by Summit Park, independent of any kind of misconduct by the lawyers here, it's absolutely clear, based upon everything we've been talking about today, looking at Judge Babcock's order, it's all about the lawyer's conduct, and it's all about imputing that conduct to my client and having a death sanction, if you will, by dismissal of the counterclaims. The fact of the matter is that what we really are talking about is this correction of, something which, again, happens all the time, as you pointed out, Judge Babcock, when you're talking about, an EUO where you've got the lawyers who and counsel for the lawyers acknowledge that it was their involvement. They were solely involved. The lawyers were involved with dealing with Keyes with respect to this. It had absolutely nothing to do with the Summit Park. The mere fact that you have, and Judge Babcock puts this into his order, and I would ask this court to look very carefully at what Judge Babcock did and what he said about my client, was the fact that, yeah, they had an executive session, and in that executive session, there was discussion about hiring of Keyes. But that wasn't what the wrongful conduct's about here. It's not all about hiring of Keyes. It has to do with the disclosures, and my client had
absolutely nothing to do with it. There's no finding that my clients had anything to do with the problems with respect to the disclosures, other than Judge Babcock making a statement that somehow my client might have been had some. And he, again, he finds no bad faith here by my client. Just says something, well, we might have some sense of responsibility. That's a term that he uses at one point in the order for the disclosures. Those are things that lawyers do. That's something that these lawyers were doing on behalf of Mr. Keyes. There's no finding whatsoever of absolute misconduct by Summit Park that should at all justify the imposition of this sanction, which means that they will not be able to prosecute any cases against auto owners. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel excused, and the case shall be submitted.